This is CliffCentral.com.
Oh, man. This guy. Doobie Brothers, Steely Dan, Michael McDonald. So oh, he's great. I just love that that part of the song where every time you're near, ba, ba, ba. It's just so well put together. What a genius musician. Love that voice, though. It sounds like he's almost singing. It comes from like the back of his throat. It's unbelievable.
It's quite rich.
Yeah, I love it. What a great guy. I saw him singing. Yeah, I was in Los Angeles for the NBA All-Star game at Staples Center. And this is like 2004, 5, somewhere around there. It's long ago.
Yeah.
And he was there to sing a song. And I think he might have done the anthem as well or something. He was rehearsing, and we were allowed into the arena because we had this guy who was the NBA guy for South Africa, and he took us through, right? So we got to, and I say we, it was me and Azza Azania, who's now on 702, and Randall, who I saw this week, incidentally. And the three of us were standing in the middle of this arena, the Staples Center. It's huge. It's, you know, famously one of the most impressive basketball courts in the world.
Yeah.
And it's got these incredible LCD displays all around. And I mean, it must look even more incredible now. But in 2004, 5, it was very impressive already. And little old Michael McDonald goes, sits at the piano, and he starts doing like a little warm-up thing. And he's just testing the acoustics.
Yeah.
They're doing just a sound
jamming.
Check. Yeah, they're doing a sound check. He hasn't got a band or anything. And he just sings a little bit on the microphone. And I thought, oh, this is the most privileged thing in the world.
Wow.
I'd pay half of everything I have to have experiences like that all the time. In fact, I'd pay three quarters of everything I have, and I'd give up stuff that I love to have experiences like that, to be in that place. And there were probably, you know, guys putting furniture in place and moving stuff around on the stage and adjusting the lights, but no one was really paying attention. And Michael McDonald's
did everyone cheer when he?
No, they just carried on working.
Wow.
It was unreal. I mean, that kind of thing just blows me away. And I think, how lucky am I that I got to be in that little room, that huge room, with this genius sitting at the piano. Mm. And I mean, you think about the songs he's done with the Doobie Brothers and with Steely Dan and. What a great
such
artist.
Good stuff.
All right, enough about that. I got a great message from someone here because it's Friday. And someone said, Friday the 13th is still better than Monday the whatever.
Yes, Monday anything.
So if you're feeling like you, you know, you're happy that it's Friday, but you're worried about the
13th. Well, you know, it is almost Monday.
Yeah. Stop it, Leah.
We're very, very close to Monday.
Stop it. You always do this and ruin everybody's day. Just stop it. All right. What's happening in the world?
You know, these stories start with a Florida man, and then we all laugh at the stupid things that a Florida man has done. This is Florida in the U.S., obviously.
Yeah.
Well, this is quite interesting. It's a teenager who is accused of trying to have her parents killed in a murder-for-hire plot.
You haven't tried that?
No, not this week. Okay. So she was arrested this week on charges of attempting to have her parents killed. She's been ordered to remain in custody. Her name is Alyssa Michelle Hatcher. She's accused of stealing nearly £1,500 from her parents' bank account.
Ugh.
While trying to carry out her murder-for-hire plot.
What a disgusting creature.
And what did she do with the $1,500? She used $400 to pay a friend to have her parents killed. And then when that act was not carried out, she paid another person $900 to do it. She also used money she had stolen from her parents to buy cocaine. So she had some coke
real.
And arranged to
this
have
is a real winner of a child.
Killed.
Yeah, well done. What a great child. And, you know, people always go, well, the parents, just, if the parents produce a horrible child. But here, this is a horrible child who's trying to take out her parents.
Where did she do the deal? At a known drug house.
What a horrible creature. Really?
So her parents have said that they do want to press charges against their daughter. She's been charged as a juvenile with two counts. She's been charged with two counts of criminal solicitation for murder.
All right.
And we'll hear what happens to her when she appears in court in October.
well, the parents didn't have any compunctions about going after her, right?
No.
They were like, nah, lock her up.
Like, that's that.
Yeah. Yeah, here she is in a counseling session. You want to hear this girl be sitting in a counseling session? Listen to this.
This boot camp is home to Vicky Pollard, a member of Britain's thriving underclass. Of course, in America, she will be considered aristocracy.
That's when I started messing around with drugs and stealing, and then I'd steal to feed the drug habit. And
that's one of the other girls.
Now I was just in a lot of pain. And I think being here at camp has really helped me understand that.
Thank you for sharing that with us, Lindsay. It's very moving. Vicky.
Here she is.
What?
Tell us a bit about your home life.
Because I live at home with Shelley, and she could be my mum, but she might be my sister, I'm not sure. Maybe she's both. Anyway, she's like, well, harsh, because once, right, she grounded me for 15 minutes, and it was so unfair, because all I did, right, was go down Baskin Robbins, because Denise Welby got a Saturday job there, and I made her give me all the money out the till and shat in the mint choc chip.
I think I got some of that. And what about school?
Oh, yeah, I went there once. It was all right.
You went there once?
Yeah. I've done math, or something in that, histography, biometry, and... Oh, what's that one where they're all talking some weird language in that and you can't really understand it?
French?
No, English.
Right. And what brought you here to camp?
A bus.
I mean, what sort of behavior brought you here? Did you experiment with drugs?
Oh, my God, that is so out of order. I tried drugs, like, once for, like, 8 years, but apart from that, I've never even done nothing or nothing. Anyway, if anyone should be here, it's Kelly Bailey, because she's been saying really nasty things about me in front of my back, because she's well jealous, because she really, really fancies Stephen Dean, and he took me up the wrong and round the back of Dunkin' Donuts. But just because I've done it with him, don't mean I fancy him. I'm not a slag.
Yes, this is the
girl. Do you feel your time here at camp has helped you?
I'd love to say yes, because I have really been trying, because I am actually a very trying person, but unfortunately I have been really put off, because all the other girls here are bitches, apart from Suzanne, who's a total bitch, because she flubbed in Amber's hair and blamed it on me, and I was like, oh my god, I still can't believe you just said that, because there's no way I did that. Why would I do that? Why would I even do that? Why would I even flub in Amber's hair? What, I waste?
Oh my god, I still want to do
that. All right, so that's what happens with this girl when she goes to jail eventually. That's an exact conversation copy of what will take place.
How to ruin your life as a teenager.
Here's a great story. You know, Marianne Tum from the Daily Maverick does some great stuff. Apparently she's found that Mozambique's one of the poorest countries in the world, to achieve in 2 years what South Africa has failed to do in 10 with
what
digital migration. You know what Cloudy was meant to do at the SABC in order to migrate everything that's analog into digital? Mm. Well, we still haven't got that right. It's taken us 10 years to not get it right. Mozambique has done it in 2.
Wow.
Good God. That's a story in the Daily Maverick today. Go and take a look.
Wow.
What an embarrassment. Mm. All right. What else?
I love this article. I love this article.
Okay.
It's about truly weird historical events that actually happened. I've spoken about one of them. You weren't here, Gareth. You were away. But about the Olympics in 1904, which was a total mess because the first place finisher did most of the race in a car. The second almost died from eating rat poison.
Oh.
And the fourth place finisher raced in dress pants and shoes, took a nap by the side of the road for most of the race.
Wow.
So this one I love. There was a cat who started in the Nazi Navy in World War II.
The cat was actually in the Navy?
Yes.
The Nazi Navy?
It was part of the Navy.
Sure. In the Nazi Navy.
He then became a ship's cat.
We all say sig heil in the Nazi Navy. We like to go art and style in the Nazi Navy. Yeah, all right.
Then became a ship's cat in the British Royal Navy and survived 3 sinking ships during his naval service.
Whew.
So this cat was nicknamed
a traitor.
Unsinkable Sam.
I would say a traitor because he switched sides like that.
Yeah, he kind of did. He was actually named Oscar. He started
Unsinkable
Sam. Hmm. He started as a ship's cat aboard the Nazi ship Bismarck, which was sunk by the British ship HMS Cossack in 1941.
And he was like, I'm not sticking with these guys. They're no good at being able to pilot ships. I'm going to find someone else.
Well, the British crew found him floating on a board hours after the ship sank. So they took him aboard and named him Oscar. Then later in the war, the Cossack sank after being hit by a torpedo.
Poor cat.
Killing 159 crew members. Oscar survived again.
And you know cats don't like water.
Ooh, that's their absolute worst.
So this poor animal. Absolute first of all, worst. It was a Nazi, which, you know, carries with it some... That's not great. You have to deal with quite a lot of shit after that.
Almost sunk so many times. He survived again, and he was rescued along with the remaining crew because 159 crew members were killed. And he was given the nickname Unsinkable Sam. Then his last service was aboard the HMS Ark Royal, an aircraft carrier that was also torpedoed.
Oh.
This time by a Nazi U-boat. See how it's come full circle?
Did they ever consider that maybe they shouldn't have had this cat and that it was attracting a lot of negative attention during the war?
Oscar survived that attack as well and afterward retired to Belfast, where he lived in a seaman's home. He died in 1955, a full 14 years after the sinking of Bismarck.
Sure.
So he was even older than 14 when he died.
Well, all right. Awful. What a horrible story. I know you think it's a great story, but I think it's horrible. This poor cat, you know, what a stressful life. My last cat, my sister's last cat that we had, because we don't really have cats anymore. We've got dogs now.
Yeah.
This cat had the best life. The greatest threat to
her. Oh, that was the one that lived for many, many years.
Yeah, the greatest threat to her existence.
What was her name again?
Socks.
Socks, yes.
But her moniker was... Animale Domesticatum Optimus Maximus.
Okay.
She was the best pet.
Yes.
That was the official title. And she had a little thing around her neck that said, Animale Domesticatum Optimus Maximus.
Oh. Yeah.
She was a crazy cat. So she used to have a very pleasant time. She would lie in the sun. She would take no nonsense from the dogs. And the only threat to Socks' existence was this animal that lived across the road, big, like, you know those like, almost like a chow?
Okay.
One of those kinds of dogs. And it would come over to say hello to our dogs because we didn't have a wall at that stage. And this dog would come over looking all happy and, you know, full of itself. This cat would get on its hindquarters and smash this dog in the face and chase it out of our...
Whack.
Yeah, it would. It would actually fight with the dog. And the cat was fearless, but that was her only stress in the whole world was that.
Oh, man.
And you think about this poor cat.
Oh.
Being torpedoed, it's on a Nazi boat, then it's on an English boat, then it's on an aircraft carrier.
And then a Nazi gets bombed by a Nazi boat.
Oh my God, what a stressful life.
Did you know that cats don't actually meow naturally?
That's a thing they do for us.
Yes.
Yeah. They don't meow at each other.
So there's a big island full of cats.
And none of them meow.
None of them actually meow to each other. You hear them like...
You'd love to live on that island, wouldn't you?
Oh. If you told me now that I was going there, I had to pack and go there. Oh, it would be so exciting. So they're different meows, right?
Yeah.
There's, you know, the short, quick meow, just like that. Your cat saying hello to you.
Oh.
Okay. I get that when I get out the car, and there are four of them when I get home.
Okay.
And I get meow, 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 meow.
All right.
Then you get multiple meows. Which are an excited greeting from your kitty. You may have been away from them for several hours and now it's time to give them a much belated pet on the head. You get the mid-pitch meow where your furry friend just wants attention or food or maybe both. The drawn-out one.
Meow.
Yeah, sometimes I'm so surprised about how long they last. That's no longer suggesting that he or she wants something. They're demanding for whatever that thing is. And it's probably
food. No longer a request.
Yes. the low pitch meow, I get that sometimes when I sneeze and one of my cats goes, meow.
What are they doing?
They're complaining to you.
Oh.
It looks like the human is in trouble. High pitch meow, and that's when your cat's either cross or in pain. You know, that high-pitched squeak.
Okay.
So yes, those are the different meows, but they're all meant for humans.
Yeah, they don't use them to communicate with each other.
No.
But I have heard them going,
oh, that's do.
That's a definite cat communication.
Yeah.
And shh, right.
But then, and when they're happy, they do a, it's called trilling, that to each other.
Well, God is here on our Instagram line and our Twitter.
Oh,
and
sure. I thought he meant he was really here.
No, God is not here.
I was about to put my lipstick on.
079-748-2090, one of the WhatsApps or tweets or whatever it is, says, I'm scared of cats right now. You guys are freaking me out. Please move on and talk about the crime stats instead.
Cats aren't scary. What?
Cats are really not scary.
No.
It is Friday, bitches, says Nats in Cape Town. What a cool day. Oh, she also says, what a cool cat that Oscar Sam was. If you watch a lot of videos featuring cats, don't ask any questions or judge. There are many cats who love water. It's just a feline stereotype. Yes. Must refer to their tiger DNA.
Yeah. I also watch those same videos, and you often see clips of a cat in a bath, just kind of milling about or playing with something and enjoying it.
Here's an interesting command from Dangerous Dave. Rock out with your cock out. It's happy Friday the 13th. You can't comply, Leanne.
No.
Do you know that unless you're naked for at least an hour, all your clothes can't be clean at the same time? Unless you are naked for at least an hour.
Oh, that's true. That's very true.
Oh, that's right. I know. It bothers the hell out of me. I sometimes think about that, especially when I've tidied my cupboards and then I go, oh, but I'm wearing clothes.
Yes. So what I do is I get into my gown for that hour. Because I did the Marie Kondo method in my cupboard.
Yes.
And all of my tights I had to fold up into half and then into three and then file them so that they're not on top of each other, but in a drawer. So you're looking down on them.
Is this her advice?
Yes.
Oh.
And they wouldn't stand up because the last pair wasn't in there. And I looked down and I was wearing them. So I got into my gown and I put them in the wash and then got them, put them in the tumble dryer, folded them up so I could see them all together.
So you see everything in your cupboard all arranged neatly. That's beautiful.
Yes.
All right, if you want to get hold of us, 0797-482-090. Jesse Clegg coming to join us a little later, and we will take your calls, your thoughts, your ideas, as well as any suggestions you have. And by the way, George Meany is coming in a little later on with Auto Central.
Lovely.
All right, what else?
English phrases and where they come from.
Oh, these are great. Do you know where chunda comes from?
So when you chunda, it's when you vomit.
Yeah, and it's an Australian word.
Okay.
Chunda means chunda to throw up. Comes from watch out under. When the people on the ships used to live in bunk beds.
Yes.
There'd be like three people arranged in bunk beds. And the guy at the top might have been sick and he'd go, watch under. And then, because it sounds like the kind of word that was made up, but it actually comes from watch out
under. The Australians also shorten everything.
Yeah. So watch under. And then eventually it just became chunda.
So weird.
So now you can say to an Australian, oh, if I have one more beer, I'll be the chunda. And they'll know exactly what you mean.
So the phrase to turn a blind eye.
Yeah, where does that come from?
Horatio Nelson was a skilled British maritime officer.
Had only one eye.
Yes. In 1801, he led a naval attack on the Battle of Copenhagen.
Yes.
When his partner in the battle, Admiral Sir Hyde Parker, communicated via flags that he needed to retreat, Nelson didn't want to acknowledge it. So he turned to a fellow officer, lifted the telescope to his blind eye and said he didn't see any signal.
Ah, great.
And he won the battle.
Turn a blind eye. I like that. So we thank Admiral Lord Viscount Horatio Nelson.
That's his full name, yes. To spill the beans, likely drawn from the ancient Greek process of voting, where votes were cast by placing one of two different colored beans in a vase. Usually a white bean meant yes, and a black or brown one meant no. Hmm. So if someone literally spilled the beans, the election results would be revealed.
Oh, I did not know that.
Ah. Straight from the horse's mouth.
Where does that come from?
The 1900s, savvy horse buyers could determine a horse's age by looking at its teeth.
And that's also why you don't look a gift horse in the mouth.
It was the most reliable way to know whether you were getting a good deal or not, as opposed to speaking with the seller.
Straight from the horse's mouth.
Getting it directly from the source.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I like that.
Pulling someone's leg.
Please don't tell me it has to do with a pirate who then had to hobble and won.
It does have somewhat of a darker origin.
Okay.
Thieves used to pull the legs of victims to trip them before robbing them.
Okay.
Yes, that's it.
That's it. That's all you've got. It's not a specific person. Or,
no.
Okay. All right, let's go.
Feeling under the weather. This reminds me of Chanda, actually. When a sailor felt ill, he often went below decks. And specifically under the bow, in the front of the boat.
Mm-hmm.
The idea was to gain protection from the bad weather above, so rain, lightning, all of that. Thus, a sick sailor was described as being under the weather.
Okay.
Yeah. The phrase hands down, which means like definitely or absolutely. In the 1800s, horse racing was an intensely popular sport. When a jockey won hands down, it meant that he was so far ahead he was able to remove his hands from the reins and still win.
That's amazing.
Mm.
You're a hands-down winner. Okay, this is helpful, Leanne.
Yes,
you know how much interesting conversation people are going to have around Bri's this weekend using your brilliant phrases and their origins. People go,
don't forget.
Mildred, you didn't know that, did you? And she'd go, no, I didn't really. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of embarrassed. I didn't know where hands down came from. Well, I'll tell you, Mildred. Because you know Mildred, she never knows anything.
I know. To fly off the handle is when you become like enraged suddenly. So in the 1800s, some poorly made axes would literally themselves detach from handles, sending them flying. This would not only be dangerous, but very annoying for the person wielding it.
Fly off the handle.
Yeah. Sleep tight.
No idea.
Likely stems from the days when mattresses were supported by ropes.
Mm.
So telling someone to sleep tight meant that you hoped that the ropes were pulled tight.
So they wouldn't
which
fall.
Which would mean a well-supported bed for them overnight.
Okay. Otherwise you'd fall down.
Yes.
Imagine how frightening it is.
Can you imagine? You're
fast asleep in your little rope bed and suddenly they come undone and you smash to the floor. You're
like the princess on the pea on top of, atop of 100 mattresses.
Well, that's all actually quite true. They used to have mattress upon mattress upon mattress upon mattress.
Mm.
And they said that only someone of really high breeding would be able to tell if there was something in the mattresses.
Yes.
That made it just a little bit not perfect.
And she woke up with bruises all
over. Well, I got a very funny message yesterday from a friend of mine who she travels a lot, and she said to me, "Oh my God, I came back to South Africa and I heard a song by Rihanna. I remember this one time that you said on radio that Rihanna's mom's name was Umbrella and that she wrote the song Umbrella for her."
Did you make that up?
I made it up. Of course I made it up. Rihanna's mother's name is not Umbrella. But obviously while we were talking shit on the radio some years ago, I said, oh, yeah, you know where the song's name comes from.
I don't
from.
Remember that.
You don't remember it either.
No.
I don't either. But supposedly that's what I said.
That is so funny.
So I told people that Rihanna's mother's name was Umbrella, and then this girl believed it. So she said she's been telling people this for like the last, I don't know, 2016, somewhere around there. And she's been telling people this, and then someone corrected her. Now she's all embarrassed, and it's my fault, according to her.
Talking about those interesting facts that you spill out at a bride.
Right.
She's been doing that.
She's been saying, oh, guys, let me tell you about Rihanna's mom. That is embarrassing. I feel kind of bad, so Shelby, I'm really sorry. Oh, Leanne, this is recycling. You shared all these phrases last week, you lazy b- Did you? You did? You shared these last week?
Not all of these.
Not all? You shared them according. But this is very, very harsh criticism coming in from...
That's a bit harsh.
Yeah. This is from Pitleng. He says, you shared all these last week. I've already gone and stolen the show from last weekend and started sharing this. As someone said... Mpehleng, you've always been the smart one here. I was like, you people don't read. But deep down, I was like, thank you, Leanne and Sia. So actually, you know what? It bears repeating then. I'm going to say I haven't heard this before.
Maybe I didn't remember where I stopped because there were so many. I certainly didn't get through them all.
Here's a good one. Balls to the wall from George. George says, balls to the wall is a World War II airplane saying. The throttle on the plane had balls on the top and pushing it forward towards the wall means max power.
Wow.
Let's go balls to the wall, right?
I always thought it was a sexual thing.
Oh, probably. Leanne, your drinking is becoming a problem. You did this last week.
How many did I do?
Someone says, we did all these phrases last week.
Oh, my God, that's too funny.
Yes. Leanne, you repeated most of the...
I started halfway down the list thinking I haven't done these ones.
Hashtag old news.
That is, I'm very sorry. That's very funny.
Lots of complaints. Leanne can have the fits with her tits. That's
from me. That's instead of rocking with your cock out.
Yes, that's a very good point.
Rock out with you.
Umbrella was written for Britney Spears originally, and she turned down as a result of the Umbrella incident when she had her meltdown. So it was handed over to Rihanna. How good for Rihanna.
I don't remember an Umbrella incident.
This was Rihanna's first big hit, right? Umbrella. And Jay-Z was very much involved with managing her at that stage and obviously was in the song with her as well. Yeah, as you did all of them bar one.
Oh, so I probably started on the wrong end of the list.
Yeah, and then someone called Mildred is called in to say, please stop talking about me. I don't talk about you with my friends.
Mildred?
Yes, Mildred, who we just said... Leanne, are you having...
Maybe I'm having a stroke. I can smell burnt toast.
It's almonds you're meant to be. If you smell almonds, it doesn't matter. What are you smelling? Do you know what day it is? Is it an orange?
It's Friday the 13th.
Clearly. And you've just done a loop. Anyway, yeah. So there's some interesting stuff from Leanne that you've already heard before.
So good, I had to say it twice.
I hadn't heard it before, so I'm happy to hear it for the first time. And I threw in the umbrella. So
yes, you did.
And Chanda, you didn't know those two.
Yes, you did.
All right. Well, do you want to carry on or are you embarrassed?
No, what I'd like to do is talk about, because I actually think about him more often than I should, I suppose. Michael Schumacher.
Oh, hang on. There is news, right?
Yes.
Yeah, what's happened?
He's apparently conscious, because he's been unconscious all this time, after a surgery that he underwent in Paris.
Uh-huh. It's like stem cell surgery.
He's being... visited by former Formula One colleagues following his treatment. He's now 50 years old. And he was apparently spotted recuperating with Jean Todt, who's the Scuderia Ferrari team boss. Mm-hmm. So if we remember, he suffered brain damage in a skiing accident almost 6 years ago. And he was admitted this week to a hospital in the French capital. So yes, it was a stem cell transfusion to reduce inflammation, inflammation on the brain, obviously. And a member of the staff in the cardiology unit said, I can assure you he is conscious.
Hmm.
And it reminds me of with my mum's, hemorrhage.
Hmm.
The swelling on the brain is the main problem and extra fluid in the brain.
Yeah.
And the whole thing was finding the right shunt for her to drain the fluid. Because you and I, our brains drain an enormous amount of fluid every day and we don't know. It actually goes into your
ventricles.
Yes. But if you have a brain injury, your brain's no longer able to do that. So they insert a shunt, which will help do that.
It's a great word, shunt.
Shunt, yes. And that goes from your brain. You can actually feel it in your head. On your head and goes down your neck and it feeds into your abdominal pathway. Gets digested.
I don't know anything about that. I just know that there's cerebrospinal fluid in the four ventricles and in the spinal cord as well.
Yes.
But it protects, it nourishes, it feeds,
it flushes out.
Yeah. Any poison around that whole area. And it's between the different, what do they call them? The coverings of the brain, the dura mater, the arachnoid and the pia mater. Anyway, all very interesting.
And so we tried many different shunts.
I tried a shunt just the other day.
Okay, good. So. You get one that you can actually just pump with your hand.
I think Barry Bateman just called Julius Malema shunt.
And then you get ones that you hold up, they can hold up. It's almost like a magnet to readjust it, to readjust the levels.
Really?
Yeah. That didn't work.
It's like Magneto from
she eventually, yes. I they mean. Eventually found one that just made her brain operate on a negative pressure.
Oh, yeah.
And once they'd done that, we walked in and she was wide awake immediately. So I'm presuming that this surgery that he had, the stem cell transfusion, has done the trick and he's now awake.
Well, that doesn't mean he's having a great time.
No, of course not. But do you know what it's like waiting? I mean, how many years has it been? It was in 2013 that he was placed in a coma. It was a drug-induced coma, and then the medics gradually withdrew him from that when he displayed moments of consciousness.
Hmm.
But he's been in the land of the fairies. This could mean his recovery.
Well, I don't know. He's been brain damaged for a long time. The key is also, and doctors will know this better than anyone, so if you are a doctor, you might want to fill us in, but you've got to keep it really cold. If there's swelling, you want to keep the brain very cold, and you want to try and reduce that pressure on the brain immediately.
Yeah.
Those are the two big, what would you call them, the triage things that you need to take care of.
Yes.
Can I tell you something interesting? Have you ever seen how cashews grow? Cashew nuts.
Cashew.
They grow, they look bizarre, right? They look like they grow from the bottom of a pear. And the fruit is edible, but a cashew is actually poisonous. Until it's steamed and the toxins are steamed
out. Wow.
And then you eat that nut. But you must see how a cashew grows. Do yourself a favor today. Google that and put it on your social media and wow all your friends and family.
Wow. Yeah, they look like red pears or almost red peppers.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going on just for this little cashew at the bottom.
Yeah. And the cashew is sort of it almost looks like a very ugly nipple. At the bottom
yes,
of a very
like
ugly
a green
breast.
Worm.
Yeah. It's a strange looking thing. I had no idea what cashews looked like while they were growing until I saw this.
No.
It's terrible.
I imagined them to be in like a pod that cracked open.
Oh, here's some useful info from Dr. Jonathan Witt, who we haven't heard from in
yes.
some time. He says cold hasn't really been shown to help except in very specific circumstances. Mm. Okay. That's useful to know. So thank you for that, Dr. Jonathan Witt. We must actually get him in here at some time. He's such a curmudgeonly guy. I love talking to him.
Yes.
He's grumpy and he's angry and he has very valid points to make. And you know that they say that the difference between an optimist and a pessimist is 15 minutes.
Yes.
The pessimist's just been right for longer.
Yes.
So I want to get him in here and talk to him again sometime
Absolutely.
Soon. Also, cold is relative, he says. We used to think 32 degrees was helpful. That isn't the case based on the evidence that we now have. The target is 36 degrees. Isn't that interesting?
Sure. It is interesting.
All right. A few other messages. Someone says, all that stuff that comes out of your brain, doesn't it just turn into snot?
No, it doesn't go into your nasal passages.
No.
Definitely not.
Yeah. Well, okay. There's some useful
info.
It gets
absorbed by your bodily functions.
All right. A lot of people commenting on how you must have a brain problem because
yes,
you repeated
sorry.
All those phrases today. People,
you know,
think,
it's also an age thing. I'll tell you that.
Oh, my God.
Much.
You're not that old.
Well, I mean, I have a history on one side of dementia and on the other of Alzheimer's.
What?
I have a history of dementia on one side and on the other side, Alzheimer's.
What is it? Is it a fridge?
I'm here. I'm awake.
All right.
Don't push it.
All right. Very nice. All right. So many things to talk about this morning, but we've got Jesse Clegg popping by. So we'll get him in now and speak to him and catch up on what he's up to. It's good to see the dude again. Haven't seen him for some time. And we will take your thoughts, calls, your ideas, whatever you've got going on in your life that you want to share with us this morning. Find out about what's going down. South African singer, songwriter, 3 studio albums. When I Wake Up, his follow-up, Life on Mars, and his 2016 release, Things Unseen, have made him a platinum-selling success. After the widespread acclaim of his first album, Jesse's music has caught the attention of 3-time Grammy-winning Canadian producer David Bottrell. And in 2017, he was selected as an official artist at South by Southwest and performed several shows in Austin, Texas, as well as L.A. a collaboration with DJ duo Kentaphonic released I'll Follow You, this year. And in 2018, he released I've Been Looking, his first ever collaboration with his father. He also served as executive producer in his father's latest album, King of Time, which was released in April of 2018. From August, he spent a lot of his time in LA working on new music with prominent US producers. He came back to South Africa in October to tour with US pop star Daughtry as the main support on his arena tour. He's released 7 top 10 singles and has been nominated for 5 South African Music Awards. As an official ambassador for the Nelson Mandela 4664 Foundation, Jesse's been invited to play at Radio City Music Hall in New York for the annual Mandela Day concert. What a CV. Here he is.
Jeez, you read that whole thing, man.
It's only a little bit better than mine.
But dude, it's a good CV.
Oh, thanks,
you
man.
You must be quite chuffed with that.
Yeah, I've been around for a little while now, man.
You have. You're not this kid anymore.
Yeah.
Who people go, oh, you know, there's Johnny's son and he's doing really well. You've achieved all this stuff on your own, which is very impressive.
Thank you, man.
How are things going?
You know, it's been a wild, difficult
year. It's been a shit year, dude. Come on.
Yeah, no, it's been tough.
How's the family? How's everybody?
Well, you know, there's good days and bad days right now. It's still very raw. It's funny, you know, like, there's things in your life that you think, if this ever happens, I don't know how I'll ever continue and how I'll ever go on. And then those things happen to you. And you learn a lot about yourself. You learn about your own limits. You know, you learn that you're actually stronger than you thought you were, and that, you know, you learn how important family is and all those good relationships and those moments you have together become very precious, you know. So this year has definitely magnified those parts of my life for me in a very intense way. So yeah, I'm okay.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. I've got to say that you, your family, your dad, everything was handled so elegantly. That farewell concert, the fact that it was, you guys kept a lot of this stuff out of the public eye. You were private. People respected that about you. I think your dad just left with such grace, you know?
Yeah. No, he
and that was beautiful. Obviously, when the news came, everybody was heartbroken. And I think the outpouring of love that South Africa had for him. I mean, you couldn't have been surprised because you knew people loved him, but it must have been quite supportive and must have given you some strength.
Yeah, initially it was hard when the news broke because, you know, you want to, it's not your own anymore, you know, you want to have it for yourself and for your family, you know, you just want that time, that private time to go through it. But, I must say, you know, if I could just say thank you to people, you know, the amount of love and support and compassion we've had from actually just strangers, you know, like fans and just people around the world. I've had some amazing messages on social media and also the media, you know, the media were incredibly respectful, which was surprising. You know, they were very,
They're douchebags. I mean,
yeah. Well, you know, it was, I think
you were
meant
to come here on the morning of the news.
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
I remember because I saw Roddy Quinn that night, and he said, sorry about this morning. I said, sorry, what are you kidding? We'll do another show. Jesse will come in.
Yeah, it's weird, eh?
But you've got a lot of news going on personally anyway in terms of the music, so it's good to catch up and find out what you're up to.
Man. It's great to be back here, man.
How's the music industry as a whole at the moment? Still as tough as nails? Because that is not an easy place to be.
It is tough. I mean, I think that it's ever changing, you know, technology and the way people consume music, and musicians have to become entrepreneurs almost.
Yeah,
you know,
and salespeople, and you have to be a hustler and a wheeler dealer.
Yeah.
And you suddenly have to be able to do merchandising and stuff that before someone else handled.
Yeah. It's definitely, you know, in back in the day, I think musicians were far more focused on just making music, which was an amazing luxury. You know, it's like, I think modern day musicians look back at that time as like this very, it's like a holiday, you know, compared to now where we have to be tweeting and going to, you know, marketing events.
There's no time for sex, drugs, women, parties.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. There's literally no time. We're all just tweeting.
It's finished. Everybody's busy.
It's a sad reality.
Running their side hustle. And this going on, it's crazy, like how hard it's become.
I've actually now I've started doing this thing where I'll take, you know, 20 minutes out of my day every day, and I'll just sit with my guitar and I'll turn my phone off and I'll just play guitar and just sing and just enjoy my instrument, enjoy playing music just for myself and by myself with absolutely no pressure. It's almost like journaling, you know, you just play and you just have fun with it, you know, because
Jesse, that is your job.
Exactly. Mm. That is actually really the heart of what I do.
So, a lot of people might do, if that's their hobby, they might think, oh, what a luxury. But if you don't do that, we don't get good songs.
Yeah.
So you damn well make sure you do.
Okay.
Keep at it.
Yeah. No, it's so important, man. You know, I think musicians do everything except sit and make music, which is what we're meant to be doing. So I've definitely.
But do you have a team of people? Because obviously, I mean, you're at the stage now where you're not this breakthrough artist that we hadn't heard much about before. And you've been around a while now.
Yeah.
People know you. You've got a track record. You've got all these awards and successes. You've collaborated with amazing people. So you really have, you know, a substantial CV, and you can't be busy tweeting and figuring stuff out about, you know, which market you're going into next and plugging this gig and that gig.
Look, you do have, I'm in a position where I have support of my team, but there is still, I mean, you know, as an artist, you have to have a hand in all of it. You know, you can't just, you know, it's your brand ultimately is who you are. You know, and I hate the word brand. I don't like using that word for myself personally, but you know, I have things that I believe in that I stand for, and I have to, you know, lead from the front.
Like, what do you get involved in and not? Because you've got to pick your battles. Social media can be toxic and you might get pulled into stuff that you don't need to be pulled into.
Mm.
What do you choose? What are your big issues? What are the things that you do get involved in?
I mean, I do a lot of my own social media, you know, I mean, unless it's like, specifically promoting stuff, but you know, I certainly don't want to get involved in politics, for example.
Sure.
As an artist, that's not my scene at all.
Horrible place to go.
Although I am very engaged in it, and I'm curious about it, and I enjoy reading about it, but I don't want to go there. I mean, if there's a cause that I believe in, I will totally jump on board. I mean, I was recently working with the Smile Foundation, and
they're great, huh?
Yeah.
Mark Lubner and the work they do is just amazing. By the way, for anyone who doesn't know, a lot of kids born with cleft palates and hair lips and that kind of thing. And what Mark does is he's and the Smile Foundation, which has got a number of really, really good donors and amazing people who spend a lot of time, doctors who donate their time. These kids come in, and they can't smile, they can't talk, and it's an easy operation to do, but it costs a bit of money, and a lot of these kids just don't have anywhere else to get the help. They might be from poor families. The parents might have abandoned them, because that happens some of the time.
Mm.
And then they come in, they have this operation, and their whole life gets better. They can smile, they can talk.
Yeah, I actually stood in on an operation.
Oh, wow.
They actually let me come into the operating room, and they
showed us. You didn't pass out.
I was pretty close to
it. Oh, no.
It was pretty hectic. Yeah,
and watching kids being operated on is really hard.
It was pretty intense, but it's amazing, man. I mean, it's an incredible thing. And the other, just if I may, the other foundation that I'm working with, obviously, is the Click Foundation, which was basically the foundation around my dad's tribute song, The Crossing, which we did last year.
By the way, well done on that. That was
we've raised R1 million, you know, in the last 7-8 months, and it all goes to the Click Foundation, which is focused on literacy in young students, especially in the rural areas. You know, one of the biggest challenges in South Africa for students is we're not even at education yet. Just basic literacy is such a huge problem. And after a child reaches a certain age, if they're not literate by that point, the chances of them learning at a later stage in life just diminishes exponentially. So it's really important that they get access to that stuff as soon as possible. So yeah, that's
you know,
been
when
a,
you know, when you get serious about things, you sound a little bit like your dad.
Okay, well, I'll take that as a compliment.
It is a compliment. Yeah. I was thinking about the interest that he always had in anthropology, and you know, he gave these incredible lectures, and he was such a great storyteller too. Are you drawn in that direction at all? I mean, he would have told you these stories, and growing up, you would have heard plenty of them.
Absolutely.
Is that stuff that you're interested in?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, my sense of my dad in terms of what his first and true love was actually academia. You know, he was a lecturer at Wits for 10 years, and he lectured anthropology, and he loved it. It was a huge part of his life. So he passed that on to myself and my brother to an extent. You know, he really wanted us to have the university experience, you know. So when I matriculated, he said, you know, you can go and do music, but you have to go get a degree first.
Sounds like my dad. You can do whatever you want, but have to get a, I mean, I got the stupid law degree, never ever was going to use
it. So I did a BA law, and I majored in law and,
all of us losers end up doing law.
Law, I majored in law and English literature, and then I did an honors in English literature. So
I never finished my law degree.
Yeah. I mean, I still have to do my articles and all that stuff. I mean, hopefully I never have.
Oh, please. It's never going to happen.
Never.
Oy.
So yeah, I mean, you know, I really enjoyed academia and especially English literature, you know, like just being able to read every week a new book and be exposed to some great stuff, man. Yeah. I remember, in fact, the last time we had a conversation, we just talked about, I think it was like Darwin or something for like an hour.
What I think is so interesting about you is you're multidimensional, and in many respects, a lot of the artists you meet are either they're in their music, and that's important. You have to be, you know, balls deep in your music, but you also have to be someone who has a real interest in other things. Otherwise, what are you singing about the whole time?
Yeah, I agree.
And what I like about musicians like you, for example, and you can hear it in the lyrics and you can hear the inspirations come from different places, is that you're curious about other stuff.
Yeah, I think that is important.
Nothing worse than someone without anything else in their brain, churning out really great melodies, but can't populate them with interesting
singing
thoughts.
Smelly cat, smelly cat.
What are they feeding you? Exactly. It's a terrible thing. That's actually Leanne's hit
kittens
song.
Kittens and mittens and glee.
That's right. So tell me about tell me about what's going on now, because we decided to catch up with you, but you've actually got a couple of releases this year. On Friday, the 5th of July, you released a new song.
Yeah.
And you said, as a songwriter, I love quoting you because then you can respond to it. It's always horrible when someone quotes you. You feel that was pretentious. A songwriter, I enjoy the challenge of experimenting with my sound. The vibe of this song was exciting to me because it combines my writing style with a really bold and unpredictable production.
Oh, God.
Did you even say that?
I'm at some point, sometime.
Did someone quote you?
I have no recollection. yeah, it's a new single that, you know, the timing was a bit strange because it was just before, you know, my father got really sick. So, and, you know, so we went out of it, and then there was this kind of gap when things got hectic that we haven't been promoting it, you know,
sure.
So now I'm back to kind of talk about it a little
bit. It's really hard to promote some upbeat song while all of this stuff's going on in your life.
It's been a strange, combination, but, you know, in a way, it's good. You know, the song is about celebrating life and about, you know, overcoming your fears.
Sure.
Which is very relevant to me right now. And being, completely present, you know, so the song is about, sort of someone who's in a relationship and is saying to this other person that, you know, if you want to have a real relationship, you actually have to take a risk. You have to make yourself vulnerable.
Yes.
And you have to let come what may, you know.
Yep.
So the lyrics are, if you love it, let it burn.
Right.
You know, so you have to let that fire burn because, you're never going to really have a real connection with someone unless you are absolutely vulnerable and you're ready to take that risk and maybe get let down, you know.
Yeah.
So that's what the song
sounds
is
like
about.
Leanne's love life.
Really. Yeah. So
fire and burning and
hell and fire and brimstone,
ash and iron and stone. So what's going on? Have you got a stable relationship going on? What's been happening?
Yeah, I do, man. I've got a girlfriend of nearly 8 years now.
That's amazing.
So yeah, she's,
you keep that together. Teach me how.
I know. it's a good vibe, man. She's actually Canadian. And she's living here now.
It's okay. They're a province of America.
Don't tell her that.
Yeah, I think her parents are not happy that she's come from the most stable country in the world to one of the most complicated places in the world. But we have a great vibe, man. And, it's been a great 8 years. She's really been incredibly supportive.
And
how did you meet her if she's from
Canada? Well, he's a musician. She heard his songs and fell in love. What's wrong with you?
I was recording my second album in Canada, and we met there.
Did she just walk into the studio and go, oh my God, I'm in love with you?
Kind of. Yes. It was a bit, yeah, okay, I'll say yes.
It's your superpower.
All right. Yeah, that's how it was.
Does she ever just look at you with this dreamy look while you're playing your guitar and you're just jamming and comes in and goes, oh, I'm in love with the genius.
I think at this point she's more like, go to the studio if you're going to make noise, you know?
Oh, no.
The romance is worn off.
Yeah.
That's terrible. Yeah. Are you one of those people who's focused on, like, traditional marriage and all of that stuff?
Not at all, man. I'm not a believer in any of that stuff, man.
My sister isn't either. She and her boyfriend have been together for, I think it's 9 years or whatever. And she's not in any hurry. When people ask her, she gets annoyed.
Yeah. I don't like some... I don't know.
Conventions.
Yeah. It's, you know, I think it is important at some point.
I think it's important if you're going to have kids.
Yeah. Which we will do, you know, at some point. But,
that's a much more important decision.
Yeah.
Like, you make the decision you're going to have kids, then you organize the rest of stuff. Yeah. Because then you're responsible for a whole other creature.
Yeah, exactly. No, then your life is not about you anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Which is why you shouldn't have kids.
There we go.
Well, you're barren, aren't you?
Pretty much. I'm sure I am.
That's an uncomfortable laugh, but it's okay.
Yeah,
a lifetime of never falling pregnant once? Are you kidding me?
And you've definitely tried.
Definitely.
Yeah.
There were many opportunities.
Well, Jesse, what's the composing part of things like at the moment? Because people say when you've gone through a major life experience like you have this year, that you find sometimes dark and light inspiration from deep places that you couldn't go to before. And we know that there are great musicians who've drawn on those as places of inspiration of some kind.
Mm.
And are you suddenly, is there a flourishing yet, or are you hoping it's still going to come of massive musical inspiration? Because I'm sensing there may be something.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, the first couple months of this year was very intense, and I was so close to the situation that it was very hard to reflect on it and to try and objectify it and analyze it and try and write about it. But now, you know, it's been nearly 2 months. It still feels very...
It's no time at all, man.
Yeah, it's still very raw, but I'm slowly starting to find my voice and my perspective on it. And I've been writing a lot, you know, just by myself, and not with any purpose in mind. Just to, you know, there's something very therapeutic about writing and getting those thoughts out. And it's been really, it's like, you know, when you're in high school and you're listening to music and you get your rocks off on it, and it means so much to you. You know, it's just such amazing.
And you project yourself into every song.
Yeah. And your writing is like that as well. You know, it's such an intense, passionate experience. And I feel some of that again now, you know, just like I really need it.
Yeah. It's your contribution to the world, but it's also your creative thing.
Yeah.
So it's your way of dealing and interacting.
And it has no connection to my career or my life as a musician or anything like that.
Even if you just did this privately, you would do it.
Yeah, and it really is nice. It's a wonderful thing to be able to express yourself through.
Can I ask you a favor? Can I send all the emails I get from people who want to be musicians to you?
Because
I
have no, you may not.
No, I'll tell you why. I have no idea how to answer those questions anymore because I'm not in the music business. I'm not a musician. It's changed so much. People think because I did Idols that I somehow know what's going on. And that is not how it works.
Jeez,
what do you say? Because you must be approached all the time by people who go, Jesse, tell me how I can start my own career and how do I get going and what do I need to do and what do you think of my song? Do they make you listen to their shit songs as well?
Look, I mean, I think even people who are in the industry are constantly guessing. You know, the industry is changing so much that even if you are in it every single day, there is still, I mean, from releasing a single 2 years ago to releasing a single now, I feel like it's almost like a completely different landscape, you know, and all these online platforms and, you know, how do you break through all the noise? I mean, I think it's a harder time for new musicians now than it's maybe ever been in the history of music. Just in terms of breaking through, so difficult. I'm fortunate in that I kind of caught the last little wave of album sales and traditional music industry stuff when I entered the industry. And now that whole world is gone. You know, I mean, all the music stores, CD stores are going. And so, you know, I think that at the end of the day, no matter what's going on in the industry, no matter what social platforms, however people are consuming music, a great song will find its audience. A great song.
That is such a good thing to say because it's so true.
Yeah. So I guess the only thing I can say that really hasn't changed and really never will change is just write good songs, you know, and perform your songs well. Like just practice the craft of songwriting and the craft of live performance. That's, if you can do that, it'll carry you through, you know.
Oh, there we go. So I'm going to copy and paste that into everything from now on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I want to play Let It Burn, and then we've got to catch up with George Meany. So we have Jesse here. We've been waiting for like a year and a half to actually get you in here and catch up. But you're
awesome.
Going back to America anytime soon? What's the plan?
Yeah, I'm going in October for a month, to LA and New York, just doing writing sessions, just writing pretty much the whole month. And then I come back November and December, and I'm literally performing. I think I'm in a different city every week until
awesome.
January.
All right, well, what we'll do is once we have that calendar, then we'll put it on.
Yeah, it's all up on my website, jessecleg.com.
Well, that's even all right. Just go to jessecleg.com. Save us the trouble. So again, copy and paste. Go to jessecleg.com and you can go and see the guy performing all over the place. I want to play Let It Burn just now. George Meany's here. Stick around, Jesse. We don't need to, we don't need to chase you out of the studio. George is here for an update on motoring and all things cars. George, the CEO of Auto Trader in South Africa and the host of Auto Central, which is every Monday. You can listen to it live or you can download the podcast. How are you, George? What's happening?
Good and you, Gareth.
Good.
I'm honored to meet Jesse.
Yeah.
How's it going, man?
All right, and you?
Very good.
Good, good.
He's a hell of a songwriter.
I've heard.
Yeah, if you've heard one or two songs, you'll know what I'm talking about, right? Okay, George, so what's in your news today?
Well, 200 tons of plastic road will be laid in the stretch of the N3 in KwaZulu-Natal soon.
Ooh. Plastic road.
Plastic
everyone's bottles
road.
And straws.
Yeah, so it's recycled plastic. And what they're going to do is they're going to test this under the harsh South African sun.
Right.
The plastic is going to replace the bitumen.
Yes.
In the tar.
Like.
So this is good.
Gets all over the
because
place.
First of all the eco warriors out there who are posting fake pictures of the Amazon burning can calm their tits and drive on a plastic road and feel that they're making some kind of contribution, just like they do when they put their paper straw into my drink so that it disintegrates while I'm trying to have it.
Mm.
All right.
How long does it take these paper straws to disintegrate anyway?
About 5 seconds.
Yes. In Diet Coke. About
I don't use straws.
And then what started as a clear apple juice ends up as a milkshake.
What I can't understand is when you're at home and you take a glass out of the cupboard and you pour yourself a drink, do you take out a freaking straw?
Have you tried the smoothies that I love so much? You can't drink those from the cup.
Oh, okay.
You'll have a smoothie moustache in a second.
please, lumps of it will fall onto your eyes. It'll be a disaster.
Happens on a regular basis.
Are you into this plastic straw crap? Jesse, do you care about this?
Yeah, I am, actually.
Oh, here we go. See, we've awoken the eco warrior.
Well, I don't know. You know, I think that...
I'm all quiet. I have a glass
straw. I think that if there's small things we can do that'll help, then, you know, I mean... Do you need a straw?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, otherwise you get clumps
in
your
eyes. What about those metal straws?
Yeah. I've got a glass smoothie straw.
Yeah,
straw.
You get those glass straws. I don't really use – I'm not going to be buying glass straws. I'm not going to carry straws around. I'd rather just not use a straw.
Okay. All right.
Fine. I'm not like fighting for it or like, you know, campaigning for it, but
publicly shamed me into doing this stuff. So thanks a lot.
I do recycle though at home.
Will you drive on George's plastic road that he's talking about?
I will.
Make you
I will.
Feel better.
Yes, it actually will.
There we go. All right.
Not a bad initiative. And,
not bad at all.
And then there's a new ride hailing service for woman by woman called Chauffeur.
Oh.
Okay.
Like tease hers.
No, not like tease hers at all.
Oh, different to that.
You can get a
chauffeur from tease hers.
But this is obviously for women who've been nervous have had bad experiences, and we've heard about these.
Yeah, we have.
There are rare occasions. Thank God they're rare, but there are occasions where most of these Lyft services, these Ubers, Lyft, the rest of them, that they aren't taxify. They sometimes, like any business, there's going to be a creep or a weirdo. And for some women, this ends up in very unpleasant experiences, if not a lot worse. So obviously, in this case, I'm imagining women drivers.
Women drivers.
Only.
Only.
Women, okay.
SOS yeah. button, and it's all for women to feel safer.
Right.
And exactly to your point. So, you know, hopefully they give Uber and Taxify a go. I'm all for the competition. So.
Sure.
Yeah.
Drive down prices as well.
Yeah, that's especially in South Africa, though, with all the women problems. Yeah,
horrible.
I mean, I'm not going to name their names, but the ride-hailing services in South Africa's cars have deteriorated.
Listen, the drivers are quite crap. Eh?
Yeah, in Cape Town, I won't touch a ride-hailing service.
Really?
No, I've almost been, or literally, almost died twice.
Almost died.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm busy. I'm
over.
Being a bit dramatic. But the
it's
one
like
day,
Jesse with his paper straws,
on the way from the airport in Cape Town to the city centre, in traffic, and I hear the screeching of tyres. Wasn't the driver's fault, so I can't blame the ride-hailing service. But nonetheless, a screeching 4x4 double cab comes past the window. On two wheels, crashes into the car about three cars
ago. Oh, my word.
So I don't know if you can solve that, and it's
not
the ride-hailing service yet.
Well,
but George, what would you have done if you were at the wheel?
Pulled off the road.
But I can attest to what he's saying, because in Cape Town, it's the only time I've had issues with a service like that, where we ended up on an island on the highway.
Yeah, and I don't feel safe in those cars.
He almost missed the off-ramp, and then he decided to try and take it.
Don't you think these two are real drama queens, Jesse? Have you ever heard such bitching in your life? Really?
I mean, none of that has anything to do with the actual Uber drivers.
No, but I've got other stories inside Cape Town where, you know, narrowly missing pedestrians.
Yeah. It is hit or miss, literally.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me just interrupt quickly. Cindy, who says, I love Jesse's music. Thanks for getting him back in, Gareth. Sending lots of love from Ireland. She loves you.
Oh, thank you. From Ireland.
All the way from Ireland.
Very nice.
Awesome stuff. And then there is news of a new cannabis test, because police have been battling to test whether you're under the influence. You know, with alcohol, you've got the breathalyzer test. So how do you test for cannabis in the moment?
I usually just look at how glazed over
the eyes are. You're under the influence. With the urine test, it tests whether you've consumed cannabis in a month. So you can't really use the urine test as a under the influence test.
How much? I'm going to ask a controversial question here. How much testing have they done to determine just how badly people drive under the influence of cannabis and or alcohol? Have they compared the two? Have they done a control? Because we assume that all of these substances are bad for good reason, you know, because people's attention isn't great and their ability to react is slow and all of that kind of thing. But I want to know whether someone who's driving under the influence of, let's say, drug A is compared to someone who's driving under the influence of drug B or no drugs. And there aren't enough surveys, to my mind, that have gone to the trouble of comparing apples with apples.
I'll volunteer.
Well, I think
you're right, but I don't think there's any doubt that any substance that causes hallucinogenic effects should put the person behind the wheel.
That I've always said the biggest threat on our roads that we never research is tiredness.
Yeah, no, so that's, well, again.
How many people fall asleep behind the wheel? Truck drivers. We hear about these horrendous accidents that you assume could only have happened because the guy fell asleep at the wheel.
Yeah.
And no one pulls you over on the side of the road and the police take out an instrument of some kind
and test you.
Shove it up your ass and say, I'm sorry, sir, you can't drive anymore. You're tired.
Well, I suppose you're not trying to justify the drugs. What you're trying to say is that, one of them is worse, and that's tiredness.
Yeah, but there's a range of things that are potentially quite bad.
Texting and driving is bad.
And driving is terrible. And what about people who are angry? Like, you know how angry drivers, they brake very sudden. I know, because I've done this. You brake suddenly, you drive with like this
purpose.
Vengeful force.
Try and overtake
you
everyone.
Take corners fast. And, you know, if people are angry, I think that also is as bad as
if you're having a bad day.
Yeah. No, that's true. So this test is a saliva test and can be conducted on the side of the road.
Yes, that's because
it tests your cannabis levels.
The drool actually falls under the side of the road if you're that stoned.
So stoned,
you're drooling.
drooling.
I'm not a cannabis fan at all, but the few times that I have had it, sometimes it's been so bad I haven't even been able to find the car door, never mind drive.
There's got to be something we figure out technology is developing so quickly, there'll be some instrument that says to you, sorry, you're too tired, or sorry, you're too high, or sorry, you're too drunk, or sorry, you're a douchebag, and sorry, you're too stupid to drive.
Yeah.
Maybe the new electric cars will scan you when you get in. Yeah.
I mean, what about stupid while we're talking about this? Because seriously.
Yeah, some people have undiagnosed stupidity.
Yeah. And you see, I said this the other day on Monday. I was driving in and I saw a taxi that had overturned. All right. And this is now potentially 15, maybe even 20 people's lives in huge peril. Some of them may have been injured in that accident. I didn't see anyone who was dead, thank goodness. But I mean, I drove past. I'm not one of those rubberneckers. But I thought about it and it came to my mind that if you're a taxi driver, you shouldn't just be competent to drive. You should be more competent than the average driver. If I'm just driving in my car and I bump into something and there are no other cars involved, it's only me that can get into trouble or get hurt. And that's my responsibility. But if you're driving a whole lot of other people, you need to be extra responsible. Yeah. It's like a truck driver's license needs to be more advanced than anyone else's.
Because they can drive over stuff.
Right, and those guys are driving with like 30, 40 people in the car.
Correct.
As well. I mean, it's so overloaded.
I think that's absolutely right.
So, again, we've got to have a lot more tests. People get uptight about guns for good reason. We should get very uptight about driver's licenses.
I think you're right. I mean, it should be like an aircraft license. Every 3 years, I have to retake the test, be tested by an instructor. And I get more experience all the time, so why do I need to be retested? Why? Because maybe I can become dumb overnight.
No,
do stupid things.
You could bump your head.
One of the theories in the aircraft world is that the more experience you get, the dumber things you do because you're more confident.
Mm.
You start
flying low. You start thinking. You forget. Yeah.
You're not nervous enough to be putting in.
Exactly.
It's like a musician.
I remember we spoke about this, and I said, so what you should look for is a nervous hope that the plane that you're on has a nervous-looking pilot.
Yeah.
Nervous, but Jesse, you get nervous before you perform.
Yeah, yeah.
Not like you're shaking in your neck.
Yeah, you get like adrenaline, you know.
You don't want to let the audience down.
Yeah. I think that you know, no matter how many times you do it, you always have that sort of rush
thing.
Before
overconfidence is going to stuff up.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's you can't be too relaxed.
Well, talking about stuff ups, this Porsche, it was a 1939 Porsche Type 64.
Very cool looking car.
Never touched. Was in brand spanking new condition, obviously aged naturally, but was hardly driven. Went on auction.
Yeah, how much?
For a reserve price of $20 million. And if you go watch the YouTube video on this, the auctioneer started off the bidding at $13 million, but the guy had a foreign accent. So people thought he said $30 million.
I heard about this. He's a Dutch guy.
Yes. And he went up to $14 million, and they thought it was $40 million. And so the bids went up to $70 million.
Wow.
And eventually somebody, the auctioneer, realized that the person putting the numbers up on the screen wasn't putting up the numbers that he was saying, and then corrected himself, and suddenly all the numbers plummeted from the screen, and the car never sold.
Sure. Well, they'll just do that one again.
Yeah, they'll have to put it in the next
block.
But
this is a very bad ad for multiculturalism, really.
Yeah. True. But also, how stupid were the people bidding $70 million for a car that was worth $17 million?
Well, the guys that were bidding were arguing that they actually heard what the auctioneer was saying and that it was $17 million. And the reserve price was $20 million. So nobody got the car in the end. And then just for Gareth, a German taxi startup called Volocopter has finally raised $55 million fund a round led by Geely, the Chinese parent company of Volvo, to try and get this Volocopter up in the air within 3 years.
Thank you, Jesus. Mm. When do we get it, and how many months do I have to wait? How much do I have to pay?
3 years, not sure of the price yet. Oh,
so someone has to fly it, right?
You fly it.
So what is it? Is it like a jetpack?
No, it's a like a drone.
Okay.
And it's got multiple rotors on it, and
it's a taxi.
It's a taxi.
Vertical takeoff and lift.
That's crazy. So it's like a drone that you
the just drone get into that you can get into. And,
is it manned or unmanned?
Well, they say that these will eventually become unmanned. Maybe they will launch unmanned.
Jeez, no thanks.
You don't like
getting
that?
Into an unmanned drone and flying around Joburg.
I will.
I'd say, dude,
please,
slow
down. We've just been talking about how mad everyone on the roads are. It's much safer up there. Way safer.
Maybe.
Jeez. I'm up for it. Plus, imagine you get to your appointment on time every time. You wake up like 10 minutes late, not a
problem. Dead.
Yeah, I'll let the AI advance a little bit more before we all go flying around in unmanned drones.
So you guys are a bunch of pussies.
This is the second prototype. It has 18 rotors and features a flight time of 30 minutes and a maximum range of 27 kilometers.
No, that's no good.
Yeah, it is no good.
It flies at 110 kilometers per hour and capable of roughly 35
that's
k's.
Fine.
But I mean, 35 k's is short. Between here and any of our houses is less than 35 k's.
Mm. Yeah, about there. Yeah, I don't want to run out of fuel up there. That's a problem. Yeah. You know, if you grind to a halt in your car, you can always go get a Coke bottle full of petrol.
So this is the second round of funding at $55 million. To date, they've raised $94 million to try and get this thing.
Throw in $100.
Yeah.
All right. You want it that badly, but you'll give it $100.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot more right now. Okay, thank you, George.
You're welcome.
A look at what's going on the motoring front. Thank you, Jesse. It's always good to catch up with you.
Thank you for having me, man. It's great to be back.
Yeah, nice to see you. And we're going to play Let It Burn, let people hear it if they haven't heard it already, and go out and see his shows. He's coming here to do a whole bunch of shows, November and December.
Yeah, jessecleck.com. All the dates are there.
Fantastic. Have a good weekend, everybody. Be good, and if you're not, take photos.
This is CliffCentral.com.